breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't you wanna tell me your name? Feels like you got a lot to say. See you looking, looking my way. Been waiting for you all day.
Handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Ocala, Florida, the Ocala Breeder Sales Company, March. Two-year-old in training sale, a very good Monday. Race fans and prospective two-year-old buyers, consigners, breeders, and the like. Sale starts tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's the biggest March sale ever. We will have plenty of sales conversation. But as you can imagine, it is not the first topic and the first conversation piece recapping the weekend. Sirius 162, XM 201, Sports Zone 999, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. At Tampa, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and everything pointing toward a fabulous day. And it was a fabulous day until about 4:50 when, as the book, if you ever read it, things fall apart. Things fell apart, and there's so many questions and elements to what transpired. And not just the technical elements, which we're going to explain, but all of the tangential topics. And there's an outlandish amount of questions that need to be answered and need essentially to be, you know, quickly and openly explained, so that what little confidence players have in the overall system when it comes to the placing of wagers and the transmitting of wagers, the accruing of pools, and the distribution back to winners, whatever confidence remains can be restored. Matt Hegarty is going to join us in about 10, 12 minutes, and I expect Pat Cummings too, and I'm also hoping that Peter Berube gets some time. It's been just a absolute, it really tragedy. A track like Tampa Bay Downs that is operating without a net, without any underpinning when it comes to alternate revenue. And nobody deserves this to happen to them. And, of course, the players don't. But for Tampa Bay Downs, who had put on a fabulous show and had a raucous and appreciative crowd on hand, they were tracking toward, you know, if not a record Tampa Bay Derby day, a outstanding handle day, a day that, you know, really helps keep the lights on at Tampa Bay Downs. And so they and everybody that plays is utterly let down more than disappointed, obviously, by a system failure. And we'll try to explain so that everybody can understand the flow and where things have potential to go awry. And to be fair to the people that operate on that end, it doesn't happen. It's not like it happens, you know, on a regular basis, certainly not a catastrophic scenario like this. And I mean, if you want a quick nutshell, basically the two underpinning mechanisms that carry the information, a fiber network and an internet network, two separate circuits that are run by different companies for just this reason. In case one goes wrong, there's a redundancy. And so for both of those systems to catastrophically crash, it's unusual. We get it. But it's also inexcusable. Not on their end. It's inexcusable that we don't have, as an industry, enough redundancy that can switch off those, you know, those essentially broken circuits to another, you know, to another set of circuits, to an alternate set. There, I don't know if I should launch into this or not, and just save it for Matt. But you know, for those that I've explained this in different ways about bets and how bets are taken and why over the years, if you go back to the origin of ADW, when we were all kind of in the infancy and there was a lot more transmission issues, because at that time the three tote companies, actually did come up, right? Maybe last week at some point I mentioned, you know, the language that the tote companies, you know, have to utilize and the programming that's involved. But that, I mean, that was whatever, 20 years ago. The way in which the bets are transmitted, essentially OTBs and tracks, they accumulate the wagers and they pass it to a hub, and the hub interacts with the tote system, with the tote companies, AmpTote, United Tote, and Global Tote. And for those that don't know them, you know, the mechanics of the three tote companies, First Racing owns AmpTote, Churchill and Naira own United, and BetMakers, the ubiquitous Australian wagering entity, owns Global. And that pass-through back and forth, the OTBs and the tracks through to the hub through the totes and back. And essentially, in a nutshell here, when those two different circuits failed at 5 o'clock on Saturday, bets were stuck. Everything was stuck at that Maryland hub of AmpTotes, and they couldn't get it out because there was no, those fiber circuit and the internet circuit were both crashed and both inaccessible. That, from a simple explanation standpoint, that's what caused this. From there, you can start to ask all the germane questions. The regulators portion of this, the separate state rules and circuit rules in terms of payoffs and the payouts and how many races in a multi-race sequence have to be conducted to call it either an all or a reef. I mean, this is incredibly complex what transpired here. And the outrage and frustration is 100% justified. And, you know, the posturing and machinations about no one's to blame, that's just silly. At the same time, certainly agree with everybody, you know, from Peter Berube, most notably, who, you know, not only has Peter Berube been in the game his whole life, his father ran the TRPB for years. And so Peter Berube understands this probably as well as anybody in the game. And so when he says this can't happen, okay, now it has happened, and it can't happen again. He's 100% right. It shouldn't have happened, and there's no excuse for it happening. And we deserve better. I mean, the lifeblood of the game are the players, especially for a place like Tampa Bay Downs. And I mean, it was anguishing. Dave Grenning and I were basically there and we're dealing with things and Dave, I wasn't working. I mean, Dave's working. Dave, very, very famous last words from Dave at a certain point, I think before the Hillsboro, where he said, gosh, this day has flown by. And he said, what a great day at the racetrack. And literally an hour, 10 minutes later, you know, where it's a nightmare, and you could, you know, poor Jason Beam is up there. They didn't have an answer. They weren't getting answers, and so they couldn't provide answers. And I saw internet geschreis saying, oh, well, what's happening? They didn't know. They were trying to get information. Berube trying to get information from Amtote and from Roberts. But there's questions and there's elements of this that hearken. I saw Jay Privman made, you know, germane point about the Fix Six scandal and you know, the promises of upgrade and so forth. And, you know, and certain things did change. But I can tell you that there's a question that has to be answered that's much more overarching, which is the investment portion of the infrastructure, the amount of money spent in an area which is not thought of as a profit center. But you can't get to the equations that are profit centers if, you know, if the wiring is bad. And that's a simplification. But part of this issue is that when confronted with decisions about investing in the infrastructure, this has been put off. And of course, now we've got all kinds of other priorities demanding time and money. And I won't mention the $80 million that's you know, drifting off into the ether. So, that's the introduction. I wanted to at least provide that. Matt Hegarty will, I think, add a layer of the specifics, and we will try to answer as many questions as we possibly can. Let me also tell you what else is going on. We're at OBS, and the sale starts tomorrow. It's going to be the biggest March sale they've ever had. There is a very good attendance, it seems, based on yesterday. We kind of walked the grounds. We'll talk to Tommy Ventura for a sales introduction about 10:30, give or take. And Nick Luck will be here at 10, not here, because he's got to be in Cheltenham. Cheltenham starts tomorrow. And we got to get a Cheltenham preview. I did hear from Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad, and Kev will provide daily Cheltenham analysis, plays, and but he can't come on. He's, what did he say? He's either, I think he's traveling. I think he's got international, he is with a prominent international bank. So he does have work responsibilities. So we'll at least give you the plays, and we'll probably take a race a day this week. And, of course, we get to Vegas on Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday in Las Vegas for the NHC. And certainly interesting timing for the NHC and for what transpired, because players will have, I'm sure, some very specific thoughts about all of this. Let me mention, speaking of $80 million, HISA is having their town hall today at 4:30, a reminder, with Lisa Lazarus, Ron Moquette, and Dale Romans. All right? 4:30, and I'm sure we will remind more. And actually, Dale with a let me do one thing quickly. Mark Hennig, who I do want to stop by. Dale Romans, of course, with a very nice win, Coppola, and nice job by Nick Tamaro with Coppola in that silk run, and a nice square price. Here we are 17 minutes in, and that's what's so irksome about these problems, because they take away, obviously, more than take away from, you know, the thing we want to talk about most, which is the play and, you know, the heroics of horse and rider. And on that topic, Chad Brown and Klarvich, Seth Klarman, with another, they're starting to stack up their prospects. Domestic spending, really good, getting to the wire. That surge, and that's the worst part about it. I mean, the thing ends up a non-betting affair, and it was as fun a potential betting race as you could possibly want. I mean, the racing was terrific on that standpoint. So we'll talk about domestic product. And in fact, Chad is here, and so hopefully I can scare Chad up this morning later. All right. Sparkle Blue, that slow paces were pretty much the order of the day. Sparkle Blue for Graham. George Ruiz, biggest win of his career. That Waskasoo in the terrific Oaks. Skippy Longstocking defended in the Challenger. And I tell you, the upset that Full Nelson was terrific. And it's funny because I was texting before the race with Al Gold and wishing him good luck. And Full Nelson, if this hadn't happened, by the way, we would all be carrying on about the odds drop on Full Nelson, who went from 8-1 to 7-2. He was down as low as 6-1. Then he floated back up to 8-1. And then when I looked up and he crossed the wire, I was like, oh, my God, 7-2. All right, let's get Matt Hegarty in here, and we'll get this unpleasantry started when it comes to this topic. And Matt Hegarty is always first and foremost when it comes to these kinds of issues. Matt, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm at OBS, and I will put off the sale conversation and the race result. Other than the race results and how they impacted or were impacted by this situation. And Matt, I gave everybody a little bit of a thumbnail sketch, but I want you to fill in some blanks. I mean, there's so many elements to this.
Yeah, I mean, what we know right now is that there was a communications disruption between the AMCO hub and Tampa Bay, along with a number of other tracks. Tampa Bay was the hardest hit. The communications outage occurred at 4:52 between the time that the Florida Oaks was run and before the prices could be calculated for that race. The outage proved particularly stubborn at Tampa Bay. They didn't have it back up until 11:35 last night, according to Peter Berube. Sorry, not last night, but Saturday night. According to Peter Berube, the longtime general manager there. So what they did the next morning, once everything was back up and they were receiving data again, is that they finally priced out the Florida Oaks. Unfortunately, by that time they had already made the Tampa Bay Derby a non-wagering event. So they ended up refunding, every bet made on the Tampa Bay Derby, and then basically throwing the race out for the purposes of multi-race wagers. So if you had a daily double, it basically just became a win wager on the Oaks. If you had a pick three, it became a daily double without the Derby, etc. RCN is the vendor that supplies those communication networks. They said in a statement yesterday that the problem was not with their hardware or software, but rather their provider of bandwidth. And the problem took down both their primary link to Tampa Bay and some other tracks, but also the backup link. And it became increasingly difficult to restore that link, at least to Tampa Bay, on Saturday.
We'll get to the payoff portion, which is really its own entity. I mean, there's so many classifications of issue involved in this, Matt, that, I mean, that touch on many of the shortcomings, it seems, of the industry. Let me mention, you know, for those that hadn't, you know, seen some of the specifics, Tampa, obviously the most severely affected, but there were delays that hit Aqueduct, Santa Anita, Laurel, Oaklawn, Meadowlands, and Fauner. And Fauner ended up having to They ended up canceling the end portion of their card. Do you want to explain some of the, you know, some of those inner workings involved here in terms of why bets that actually were made and accrued can't be distributed, why there had to be essentially a full refund on bets that had come together, like, let's say, the double for the 10th and the 11th. I mean, that pool had closed. Why does everything involve other than the multi-race that ended with the Tampa Bay Derby? Why do the other bets have to be refunded?
I'm sorry, which bets that were refunded? Yeah. Everything but the multi-race bets were refunded in the Tampa Bay Derby.
Right. Now here we are. Let me go to that page. I mean, there's if you saw what I had here, to quote, to pull a line from Beetlejuice, it's like stereo instructions. The payouts from the Florida Oaks and then into the Derby, all win, place, show, exacta, trifecta, superfecta, super high five, and daily double wagers involving the 12th were refunded, as were the ones that went races 10, 9, 10, 11, 12. The late pick three was a ended up being five all. There were all payouts from the Derby, the double Wakasu all. The pick three was paid. The pick four, the pick five, and the ultimate pick six that ended. Anything that any of the multis that ended with the Derby got the all payouts. I did get a couple of questions. People asked, you know, if they having bet into. I'm not phrasing this well.
I think, you know, there's the question why Tampa Bay couldn't have just paid out, say, the pick four, pick five, and pick six with the official result of the race, right?
Yes.
Because that money had already been commingled.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, and I haven't received a clear answer on that, you know, and I talked to Peter about this yesterday when he was struggling to get his hands around what had happened. We didn't get an explanation about the communications failure until mid-afternoon. And it's possible that making it a non-wagering event, and remember where Peter was sitting at this time, when they decided to make it a non-wagering event, they still had not gotten the prices from the Florida Oaks. And it's possible that making it, because he didn't know the answer to this question when I talked to him the last time yesterday. I did try to reach him this morning and haven't had any luck. But it's possible when you made it a non-wagering event, it took that race out of the sequences, right? So the sequences just ended on the Florida Oaks.
And those determinations are basically the Florida parimutuel pools rules.
I don't know.
Okay, because I went looking for that actually, and had a little trouble finding it. Usually, you can part of the issue, of course, is that Florida doesn't have specifically a parimutuel oversight. A specific oversight operation, which
right.
has been a source of myriad problems over the years.
Right.
So
I think there are problems with, I think, you know, because, I mean, let's go back to modern games, right? Let's say they make it a non-wagering event, and then two horses get scratched in the paddock or at the gate. What does that do then to the payouts? You can argue that, you know, it shouldn't matter, except that if you had one of those horses as your singles in there, you know, how is that supposed to be treated, right? So I think there are complexities here that people aren't thinking about because they didn't occur, right? So it may have just been, let's make sure everyone who was live going into the Derby gets paid, right? I just don't know what the rules are or how the tote at this point handles that when you make it a non-wagering event, which is a specific protocol
right.
Within the tote system.
Now, and actually, I know that Pat Cummings is going to join us in a little bit, too. And Pat, so I know some of that is an area that, you know, that he's had experience with. I did talk to several different tote-adjacent entities, Matt, and... The portion of this that I think people are, you know, based on the statements that came out, the joint statement from Roberts and Amtote, I think they players are kind of flummoxed that a straightforward answer couldn't be provided when it came to these third party providers. And I tried to. From what I gather and what I got was that there's a fiber circuit and there's an internet circuit. And those are, you know, the primary and the redundant elements, and both the fiber circuits and the internet circuits both became unavailable, and that's why the transmissions could not go forward. And then in terms of the providers of those circuits, because they use two separate companies, like Lumen and Comcast, for instance, the fact that I think people could have understood more easily if it was one company and they had a catastrophic collapse, but this is two different companies and two different entities, fiber and internet, and so it does feel like a fairly unique, isolated, and bizarre set of circumstances, but there's still, that doesn't matter really, does it? The industry has to be in a position that this can be addressed in as short a period of time, and I mean almost instantaneously, and that's what is nobody's begrudging anybody in here. We just want our bets processed properly, safely, and with confidence.
Yeah, and there was a time 20 years ago where if you had a link go down, then the mutuals department would fax over a sheet saying this is how much money is in our pools to the bet processing entity who would manually enter that stuff in. So now you've gone to an automated process. And like you said, you go through two companies so that you have redundancy. And was this just a lightning strike, right? Where, one in a million, right? But obviously you need a third redundancy.
Exactly.
Here if this is possible. But there's probably actuarial tables that look at this and go, oh, the chances of both going down are so minuscule, don't worry about it. But like I said, you're now automated, right? Have you ever tried to get anything done through Twitter or Facebook? If you have any kind of customer service problem, you won't get it done, right? They've decided that everything should be automated, and you'll never talk to a human ever again. In the old days, the redundancy were human beings faxing or making phone calls to each other. That doesn't exist anymore.
The other part of this that people are waiting, and you mentioned Berube, and you could in your piece yesterday, you could just literally, in reading Peter Berube's quotes, you could feel his fury at this, and rightfully. Apparently, everybody is still waiting for what they call an RFO, reason for outage, and that has got to come from these, from these providers. And I'm not trying to slam any of the principles in here, but I don't understand why, and I think players overall don't understand why a more open and honest explanation of what they understand happened can't be communicated. When I got this specifics of this fiber and internet and companies like Lumen and Comcast, at least there was something to understand. This is what was provided yesterday and Saturday night was a boilerplate, not our fault set of quotes.
Right. Yeah. Saturday, I think, and especially when I talked to Peter Berube, on Sunday morning, he had not gotten an adequate explanation. But perhaps there is an inadequate explanation, right? Maybe the explanation is that, this was an unprecedented outage of both of our systems. And they're going to have to look at it and say, okay, how do we make our redundancy even more robust? Because we had that once in a million situation happen, and it screwed up the bets and the experiences of a ton of people.
And of course, the biggest day of business for Tampa Bay Downs. A racetrack without any safety net when it comes to alternate forms of revenue.
Right. And it's a well-run track. I mean, it's a track in which you don't normally have problems. They run a good racing product, at least to my eyes. And so I think that's upsetting, too, when you have people who are skilled and doing all the right things end up in a situation like this.
That's well framed. It was a glorious day there. There was a terrific crowd, and they were well on their way. I mean, to just a spectacular afternoon overall. They had to cancel the 12th, obviously, as well. And you'll continue, I'm sure, to monitor and keep everybody advised on what else comes out. But there has to be some separate reporting on this. I reached for Curtis Linnell, who is not surprisingly closed mouth right now about it. Berube asked for a third party investigation, and that would come from TRPB, from the internet, wagering protocol operation that Linnell runs. So they're going to, we'll have somebody that is independent essentially as well to, provide answers.
Yeah, I think, looking at the TRPB's wagering integrity unit, they do have the skill sets to kind of look over everyone's shoulder and say, okay, is the story that we're getting told the accurate story? And that's all I think Peter is looking for. He mentioned how frustrated he was with the FanDuel glitch that occurred 4 or 5 months ago. I'm trying to remember how long ago that was. Yeah. And that people in the industry never got a proper explanation from FanDuel about how that exactly occurred. And that's despite FanDuel's promises, within 24 hours of it happening, that they would be transparent about it. I know that I've had freedom of information requests to the various racing commissions, which have been denied. Because they say the incident is still under investigation. And so I think that's where Berube was coming from, where he was saying, I want somebody looking over these people's shoulders so we know exactly what the problem was. And if the industry as a whole needs to address it, then we've got all the facts in front of us so that we can move forward on a solution.
That was the superfecta, the base amount situation that
the FanDuel situation was indeed that there were certain customers of the FanDuel, not the racing site, right? Just the regular FanDuel site, who were able to make multiple wagers with only the first denomination counting, so you could have made 350 trifecta bets at a $1 denomination. It would only cost you $1.
Right. Exactly. So we can add that. And as specific robust regulator in Florida, there isn't necessarily any investigation on their end, on the state's end, the Racing Commission, as it were.
Yeah, it's been Florida's philosophy over the past 20 years that commercial entities can sort out their own regulation, and so that's where we're at on that.
Matt Hegarty, everybody, who is never allowed to rest or relax. There's always a reason. When that Batman spotlight goes up, Matt.
I wasn't on the story on Saturday because I was a wedding, And I didn't even have my phone on, so I didn't know until I got home at 10:30 that all this was going on.
Well, this swung into action on Sunday and providing terrific coverage. Matt, I appreciate it, as always.
Thanks for having me on.
Matt Hegarty, everybody, the Daily Racing Form's business correspondent, and another correspondent of DRFs that when they allow him to do some race reporting is terrific. Every so often, there'll be a Matt Hegarty Keeneland coverage day, and he loves it, and he's fabulous at that as well. Pat Cummings is going to fill in a few blanks here too. Let me get Pat in, and then we've got some Cheltenham to talk about. We'll get Nick Luck a little past the top of the hour. Pat Cummings, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Pat, you know, certainly this is in your wheelhouse. If you go back to Thoroughbred Idea Foundation and some of the white papers, and you wrote the series about tote security and tote issues. Fill in some of those blanks. I know you were listening in. Some of the things that you think people, you know, probably don't understand and need to.
Yeah, sure. And thanks for having me on and tackling it, Steve. First, I'll just address the issue of where the state of Florida is in all this. The state, of course, is completely deregulated from a racing commission standpoint. And so while there are statutes empowering and allowing legalizing wagering, there are no rules governing it. The rules reside with the individual host tracks. So stewarding and policies relative to interference and all of the wagering decision making still resides with the individual associations. So that would be one reason you're not finding rules on this, because it would be up to the tracks to publish them directly, and they don't actually do that. So that's one element in play here. The origins of this really do go back to, and the origins of the experience that we had on Saturday go back to the Breeders' Cup Fix Six scandal. They really do. And for those that recall it at the time, the Chris Harn, Glenn DeSilva, and conspirators, one of them worked for Auto Tote, Chris Harn, and he essentially hacked a ticket that had been bet on the Breeders' Cup Pick Six. And with his intimate knowledge of the system, he had also done this several times previously on other bets. He knew that the live ticket information was not transmitted to host tracks until after the first four legs in a pick six. The pick five didn't exist at that time. Similarly on a pick four, I'm not sure exactly what it was at the time, but it wasn't. All of that information is not sent to the host track when the bet is placed. So a fix to this loophole that had enabled Chris Harn to basically fabricate a ticket that had the first four winners of the Breeders' Cup and then all in the last two legs that ends up getting exposed because he ends up with the only winning ticket because he used Volpone, of course, is all. And they mispunched it for a $12 ticket instead of a $2 ticket and had six winning tickets. And it just became very obvious something was going on here. And I think it is worth noting that at the time, and I recounted this in the wagering insecurity paper, Auto Tote executives came out and said, no, there was nothing wrong here. This was, everything was fine. This is legitimate. We know where this came from. This worked. And then when it came out that Chris Harn had done this, they said, look, our detection systems worked here. Of course, at the time, they didn't know that he had done this several times previously, where clearly detection systems did not work. So the tow companies do not have a long and fabled history of being open and transparent when these situations have occurred in the past. In fact, quite the opposite. So the discussion within the industry at the time was, how can we better secure, particularly, multi-race bet placement, but really, of course, all of it. And the wagering insecurity paper we did outlined that, you know, many of these plans never came to fruition. They wanted individual transaction level detail getting transmitted to tracks, and the internet capability wasn't there at the time. But, and this is very key to the situation that took place on Saturday, the biggest upgrade that did occur at the time was how information was sent from the bet taker to the host track relative to pick 3, 4, 5, and 6 bets. And this will explain why all was utilized for the Tampa Bay Derby and why bets that were locked in race 7 or 8 or 9 were paid out as an all. When today you place a pick 4, 5, 6, 3 bet, the host track, let's say today it's Parks, the host track does not know how you bet the entire ticket. The bet taker transmits how much your bet was, say $60, and the horses you used in the first leg. And when each race in the sequence goes official, the tote system on the remote betting site, let's say TwinSpires, FanDuel, etc., are told, hey, number 8 has won this race. How many people, we know how many you had that used number 8. Send us the second leg horses for all the tickets that use number 8. And they'll say, all right, we've got 110 tickets on number 1, 200 on number 2, 74 on number 3, et cetera, all the way on down. And that information gets transmitted after every race in the sequence is official. That is why you can see now some tracks publish how many tickets are still alive. That didn't happen previously. That happens now, okay? And it actually happens in more tracks because it's a feature that's been added in and you can choose to use that. Okay, so when the tote communication was lost in the 10th race, as the 10th race was being run, Tampa did not have a way to communicate to all of the remote bet takers, here is the official result of race 10. Send us all of your live tickets for race 11. And when Tampa ran the 11th race, the outcome is now known. And essentially, I'm not saying this is a good answer, Steve, but the veil of secrecy has now been removed. The outcome is known. So if at some point in time, 6, 8, however many hours later, it is now known, hey, we're still waiting on getting the tickets to figure out who was alive to what, how many winning tickets we play. If you're on track at Tampa, Tampa only knows how Tampa customers bet. They don't know how the TwinSpires customers bet.
Right.
So that information could not be transmitted based on my understanding and longtime research of the tote system. They would not have known how many tickets to pay out. And so once the result is known, you know, all gig, you know, it's out there. And the essentially the security for the security of all players here, it's paid to all. Now, similarly, if you bet the Tampa Derby at 2 o'clock and you were going out to Matt Hegarty's friend's wedding and you've bet domestic spending and you have an exacta, you know, $100 exacta domestic spending, no more time at 2 o'clock, you think your bet is in, except it's not. It's in at your remote bet taker's location. It's on your ADW. It's at your OTB. That information does not get transmitted to the host until the previous race goes official. So if you're ever sitting watching your ADW as a race goes official and it cycles over to the next race, you'll see a flash of the pools. Initially, it'll say 0 for the upcoming race. And then there will be an influx of money That's the host track's money that will show first. And then the second update of the bets is all of the merging of all of the remote locations. So at Tampa on Saturday, if this had all worked normally, what we would have seen is, let's say, you know, there was 20,000 already bet on track at Tampa in the wind pool, you know, 8,000 in the place pool, you know, little bits of money here. And then boom, a big crush would have come from all of the remote locations that had already pre-bet the race. And then that money would come in. When the communication goes down, that information is not able to be transmitted. And so that is why there could not have been even a payout for the early bets that had been placed. Now, Tampa has never gotten that information, and they don't. Once the race is run, I think there was a lack of trust, to be fair, which still exposes a vulnerability. It exposes a lack of confidence in the overall system. Tampa is not able to see every bet that has been made. And so they're not able to necessarily, I'd say, trust the entirety of the system. So that is, you know, what we saw happen, believe it or not, in terms of paying out to all, is a feature that was updated after the 2002 Breeders' Cup Fix Six incident. It was not a bug. And I'll tell you, I had my first call Sunday morning was with Andy Beyer, who said, "Pat, you know, why are they paying all? You know, I don't understand it." So I know there's a lot of players out there, and I heard from many of them yesterday. The whole thing is it's just unthinkable for a track like Tampa to have experienced it. And I do wish that there was a central source in the business that could come out and really articulate this very well, but we didn't hear that. And, you know, it's another black eye, another gut punch to the confidence of horse players nationwide.
Well, and that's the most, you know, the most apparent or the most glaring element of this. That with, you know, any time, and even though there really has not been anything like this at this level, and anything along these lines, including as Matt referenced the FanDuel Superfecta base yeah. amount situation. This one. Yeah. Yes, there's clearly an external element that I've tried to lay out, these fiber circuits and the internet circuits, companies like Lumen and Comcast involved. And, you know, we need that RFO, the reason for outage. Amtote and Roberts are waiting for that answer.
Yeah.
But
they
should have also done a much better job by Sunday morning explaining what they were waiting for, and having this nebulous and obfuscated answer only further alienated and infuriated everybody involved, starting with Peter Berube.
Right. And for the first comment to come out of Todd Roberts' mouth in writing to be everyone needs to stop blaming Amtote, so you're blaming horse players for blaming the wrong person. Gotcha. Okay, good job with that one.
Well, let me ask a couple of sort of blue sky and potentialities cloaked in the kinds of questions that pop in people's heads. And Chuck Simon and I were bouncing things back and forth, and Chuck had a terrific question, which was in a day and age where on Zelle and Cash App and Venmo, you hit send and it's in somebody's account virtually instantaneously. I mean, within seconds.
Yep.
How is it that we're not in a, you know, in a similar infrastructure? And is it practical to think that that's a place we can get to?
I would like to think so, but I think it's worth noting that if Zelle's servers, if the
yep.
operations
yep.
behind Zelle's, if their servers go down
yep.
For a period of time and some of the backups fail, or maybe let's say half of them go down and it clogs the throughput, then I think there could potentially be an issue there. And they have enough resources and there is enough attention on them to mitigate that as quickly as possible, right? Look, think of it in the most personal circumstance. Let's say you call a friend and you say, hey, why don't you come on over to the house? We love this show on Netflix. You love it. Why don't we watch it together when it debuts? And the friend comes over and your cable goes out. Is your friend blaming you or are they blaming the cable provider, right? So Tampa Bay has, it's a bad experience, but they're not saying, geez, Steve, you know, thanks a lot. You know, this is Time Warner, or this is Comcast, or this is Spectrum's issue. And you know, that's, but is it a bad experience? Yeah, it is. Someone has been affected. The difference is you're not sitting there waiting on a possible $3,000 pick five return in order, you know, so that you can watch the next episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, right? Like it's different when money and investments are involved. We have seen trading platforms lose connectivity. We have seen the NASDAQ go down from time to time, but these outages are typically very limited because of the attention that is paid to the importance of making sure that if there is a problem, it is fixed very quickly. And by gosh, this was not fixed very quickly. There was very little confidence was not helped in any way, shape, or form by this. If the tote delay, we've all experienced them, 15 minutes here or there, right? Typically, it seems at the end of a card more than some other times, but they happen. Money gets hung up in some of the different remote bet takers. And look, even the customers, Steve, most customers are completely benign to what tote company is processing their bet, what the tote company is at the host track. There are competitive relationships, and you have different companies talking to each other in order to facilitate these transactions. So I don't want to downplay the complexity of it. They are processing a lot of transactions, but nowhere to the extent that other areas of our life, banking, are certainly processing more. It is, you know, these are solvable problems, and very realistically, I don't think racing is putting enough resources into ensuring a seamless experience as much as possible. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Now, and that is one of the follow-ups here that some people would, you know, could address. I mean, there's already, I've already heard suggestions that each of the tote companies have various options at their disposal, including the ability to switch everything from one hub to another, and that some of them have a more adroit capability on that front than others.
Yes, and you raise an interesting point that I think it's also worth addressing. There's been some focus on Aqueduct's ninth race on Saturday,
right,
and that seemingly customers who were coming in through a certain AmTote providers were shut out, where Aqueduct did not accept those bets. And it goes back to Mike Maloney's lamentations from years ago that you can have a ticket, you can have a bet confirmation, you can have a serial number. If your bet does not merge, you do not have a bet. And it's a little unthinkable that you could have this proof, this receipt, this confirmation. But if the tote connection does not get made, your bet has not been placed. And it's a terrible experience, but it is one that does happen from time to time, given how much is ongoing here. And that was, I think, you know, the specifics of that situation, certain customers on certain ADWs would have seen a refund in the intra-race bets tied to Aqueduct's ninth race. That was as this was going on. they started to see some issues that were affecting them to some degree, not in the totality of what Gulfstream and Tampa experienced with a full loss. So that's certainly an element that comes into play here, and Mike Maloney's work really was big on that.
In fact, Mike Maloney was somebody that I got a I had a request from a regular listener for Mike's input, and of course we're going to be in Vegas Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and there's going to be a handful of players in that room that might have a few opinions on this.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Have a great time out there. I won't be out this year, but wish you luck and all the players and have a great time.
Pat Cummings, everybody. Pat, I appreciate it. And
we'll likely
have a follow-up to this as well.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
There you go. Pat filling in a few more of the blanks to help everybody at least understand. I wouldn't ask anybody to forgive this because it really is. It's an unforgivable incident that, you know, we operate, you know, just assuming essentially that, this is, I won't say foolproof. I mean, because there's the occasional little thing that crops up and it's a short term or, you know, basically a blip. This is a symptom of a much broader, problem, has vexed the game for an extended period. Got to get, because this will be our only chance to get Nick Luck in for his take going into tomorrow's opening day at Cheltenham. Give me one second here because I've got to connect. There we go. We also actually have I might have a momentary opportunity even before Nick, though, because there's a fairly prominent horseman across the way. And let me see if I can't. That's a disservice. All right. Let's go grab Nick. All right. And we look forward every year to Cheltenham. And at some point, I'd love to go over, like any number of American fans, American jump fans, Steve Anderson, as we've discussed, and Pete Fornatel goes over, Sean Clancy, and I'm sure there's other people that I just not necessarily heard that go over on a regular basis. I one thing I certainly was going to suggest today, I had anticipated suggesting, was telling everybody you got to go to Tampa for Derby Day at some point. It should be, it should be on your agenda. It's one of those places, and for years our Derby Trail members had an annual, at least one, sometimes more, get together at Tampa, and it's just because it's so relaxed, and it's a real shorts and t-shirt kind of a place, polo shirt. Marty McGee, it was great to be able to finally see Marty after, it's been going all the way back to Derby and last year when Marty was, retiring from turf riding. But he, you know, stepped right into the jock agent role and working with Joe Talamo. And he said he was very frank. He said, it's hard work. He says it's not. I mean, not that he thought that it was, like clipping coupons, but he says it is hard. He said you got to hustle and hustle and hustle and he says you got to work the backstretch. You got to work the phones. And so he said, I'm not coming on until we start doing real good. But it was great to see him. But Marty was there with a lot of friends from his days with the Baltimore Sun. And you know how lovingly Marty's always talked about the time in Maryland. So they were there was quite a bit of overlap, actually, of our friend Jack Murray and his guys, the Five Hellions, as they're called. They've got they've had some success as a ownership group. And I met for the first time. You've been hearing about him for years. The one and only Vince Brecali Jr. Jimbo was there, and I took a picture, sent it to Tony, which was pretty funny. And I promised Jimbo that we'd get him on with Tony sometime soon. But he was hanging out with them, so everything was fabulous. And for this to have happened to them at Tampa was just so unfair. I imagine that those listening to the track feed, and I'm sure a lot of people did as horses circled the paddock. And I should mention, you know, those horses were under tack for 40 minutes, and quite fortunately, the weather had cooled a little bit, just enough, actually, a little bit of cloud cover. It was warmer earlier in the day. And then as it got later in the afternoon, it cooled. So it wasn't uncomfortable for the horses, but you do worry about that, them being cinched up for that long. So, yeah, stop for a second. You do worry about that. And yet they were perfectly behaved in the paddock. And then they all went out and they ran their race. And obviously they ran their race. They ran it slowly. the pace was slow, but they all finished with a flourish. And it was an exciting derby, other than the fact that we couldn't bet on it. And one thing we can always bet on when we show up at OBS or when we show up at Clocker's Corner, like a genie, like a
guy just appears.
You rub the console,
yeah,
and boom, Billy Koch.
What's happening, Steve? It's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
I haven't seen you in a while. You look good.
Well, thank you.
Got some color.
That happened actually Saturday at Tampa, where just walking back and forth from the paddock.
What a strange day that was. I'm sure you were talking about it. I just walked
out.
Is that what you were talking about?
The first hour talking about it.
What's the give me the 10-cent version of what happened?
We
10-cent version.
Dealing with a little bit of technology log jams, kind of an hourglass scenario, and
needs to be fixed.
Well,
we can't have things like that.
No, I mean, and even if you're not going to fix things by bringing everything into the most modern technology, just added layers of redundancies.
Yeah. Yep.
Could stop.
Yeah,
this.
That was weird. I mean, I was watching. I had no idea what happened. that was strange.
Well, and that's the part of it for Tampa Bay Downs. It was really sad because the immediate reaction is, oh, Tampa, it's a nickel and dime
track.
Yeah,
it had nothing to do with that, right?
It had nothing to do with that. It was so unfair, yeah. And because they weren't getting immediate answers from the tote and from
it's just too bad. It's too bad for the bettors. Obviously, they always get screwed, which just is so bad for our game, and it's just a bad look. But anyway, let's talk positive. What's going on at OBS? This is amazing. This is a beautiful day. It's a little chilly, but it's
awesome.
Nice horses. It's really nice out there. The you know, we had Todd Wojciechowski on our podcast the other day, and just did such a great job. He's such a good guy, and I know these guys are doing the best that they can. I saw that Rapoli tweet. I'm sure you've talked about that.
I actually haven't, because it happened as we were going into the weekend. And
another interesting statement. I like the guy. I do. I like him. Like, as a person, I've met him several times. He's come on our pod. I just don't understand this whole thing. I don't get it.
For those that did not see it. Frankly, Mike took a broadside at the concept of Bree shows, and of
he makes good points. I don't know if the data really does exactly say exactly what he's talking about. Look, do I think? Look at me in the eye. If you think, do I think that it's good for horses to breeze 20-2 and 20-1 and that kind of thing? No, I think they're going way too fast. I think it's, but at the same time, there are other people out here that are really, really good horsemen. And I'm not saying those guys aren't good horsemen, but I'm saying there are people out here that are good horsemen. And it's up to us to do our job to find ones that we can move on with, that we can, you know, we've had some good success here. Elm Drive is a perfect example of a filly that we bought off Paul Sharp that's now gone on to multiple graded stakes victories and the grade one placing. You know, we bought a filly last year named Ice Cream You Scream that won her first time out. She was injured, but she had an injury that a lot of the horses have. I don't think that had anything to do with the Bree show. And now she's back. So we've had some success here, and for our product and our business and the horse racing community in general, I think it's okay to come out and look at these horses and do your due diligence. How do you feel about that? That was the long-winded answer.
Well, my there's actually Nicole Russo in her 2-year-old in training sale.
Yeah, I see you looking
PDF.
At it.
Yeah. She wrote a piece, Bree Show Times, Don't Tell the Entire Story.
White Abario, perfect example.
And I can tell you that as somebody who's bought here, you know, we're not going to be able to afford the 9-4s and the 10 flats.
Yeah.
And even the 10 ones. And so you look to the horses that go, you know, basically the ones that you see and your advisors see as good movers,
mm-hmm.
that are in a growth cycle.
Right. That could be a good 3-year-old.
Exactly.
Give them time.
I mean, if you want to buy a precocious horse that's fast now, okay, they're going to tout themselves those breezes.
That's right.
You know, to OBS's credit, I mean, one of the things that does mitigate those 9-4s, it is a synthetic surface.
Absolutely.
And so they're not getting the pounding that they would on a dirt track. And they don't go that well.
We could talk about, you and I could probably sit here and talk about this all day. The fact is, there's really good horsemen here. They do a nice job. Their job is to sell these horses. We're in the pin hooking business. We have been for several years now and done very well. And we work with good people, Julie Davies, Tom McCrocklin. Yep. And I've seen those, you know, I saw that email that the guy sent out about Tom, and I think they had one about Ocala Stud and about their horses. No, I didn't see any of the horses that Tom had success with, like Ruby Nell, who we actually bred, who just won the graded stake the other day, ran really good in the Pegasus. We bred that filly. We sold her for, I think, $1 million something to Spendthrift as a pin hook. And she's a graded stakes winner, and she's a winner, and she's worth a lot more than that. So, and they didn't have that on Tom McCrocklin's thing. So that was a little bit upsetting.
That framework, Billy Koch with us from Little Red Feather, that framework is really what prospective owners, that's the thinking and the approach that you have to take. You're going to rely on someone who is, and whether it's your trainer, I mean, every prominent trainer will be here. Mm-hmm. I mean, the trainers that want to utilize,
sure.
you know, these sales, you know, you're watching, depending on your budget.
Yeah, of course.
You're watching
of course.
How
it has
a horse,
lot to do with it.
Well, and then
you can call me Billy Bean.
Like that. That was on this morning, actually.
I was on last night, too. It's one of my favorite movies.
It's fabulous. It's just
adapt or die, Steve. Adapt or die.
You think you know, but you don't.
That's right.
Not going to fire you. No. I will now.
I will now. That's right. That's right. That guy Grady is actually an old baseball scout. He really was a baseball scout.
Oh, that's
I've known
cool.
him for years, yeah. Yeah.
Well, there were plenty of them in the
Oh, yeah,
in,
the guy.
The scene.
So Artie Harris, he calls him Artie in the thing, too. He's the little guy. He was married to Tannis Harris, who was my high school guidance counselor. And Artie worked from West L.A. Yeah. It's great.
Well, you must have been disappointed that you had to be here. And it was the best Oscar show in 30 years
last
night.
I heard it was really good.
It was let me tell you something.
It was good.
I usually
my dad was there.
Well, it was spectacularly entertaining.
Yeah.
I
saw the I'm Just Ken bit. It was really funny. Yeah, and Jimmy Kimmel was good, too. I don't know why I had to go politics at the end, though. That kind of was weird.
Yeah, he didn't. It was actually.
Was it a real tweet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was.
Of course.
Donald Trump really tweeted
that? Of course. Of course.
That's so funny. I had no idea. The only two things I saw was that and the I'm Just Ken bit, which I thought was good.
But there was so many other moments.
Emma Stone was good. My wife said that,
she
was really good.
You could see she was genuinely
shocked. Well, the woman from Killers of Flower Moon, I mean, she was really good. Did you see that movie?
I did.
Did you see Oppenheimer?
I did.
I loved Oppenheimer.
Flower Moon was brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's not a movie I'll ever watch again.
I agree. You know what I will watch again, though? I just saw Dune 2. Did you see that? Are you a Dune guy?
Am I a Dune guy? I can tell you that when I was in junior high school...
You were a Dune
and
guy.
Everybody was passing Dune around. You get these dog-eared copies of
the
Dune.
The big, yeah.
You know,
I never read it.
It's the size of a brick. and I didn't get 14 pages in. Lord of the Rings.
But did you see the first Dune, new one?
No, I wouldn't.
It's brilliant. These two movies are unbelievable.
Kyle McLaughlin.
I promise.
I want the Kyle McLaughlin version.
Okay, I promise. I promise these two movies are amazing. This guy, Denis Villeneuve, I don't even know how to say his name. He's awesome.
As always,
I love that we're not even talking about. Yeah,
no,
exactly. What do you need to talk about? Am I good? Are we good?
You're always fabulous. What's your first crop sire interest? Who do you like?
I like McKinsey. We have a really nice McKinsey.
We bought her
as a yearling.
How many?
We bought her as a yearling.
Are you selling anything?
We're selling four.
What? Let me get the hips. Hold on.
I don't even know the hips. I'd have to put on my glasses. They're with Tom. I'd have to put on my glasses. It's Solana Beach Sales. It's Tom McCrocklin we're selling for.
Yes.
I can tell you the hips in a second. And then we're looking to buy. So, you know.
Who would they buy? You got to at least give me that.
Yeah. No, I'll give it to you right now.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the hips. We have, let's see, 315. 405.
315. 405.
503. 575. An authentic Colt. A Spikester Colt.
Going way too fast.
I'm sorry.
503.
And 575.
575.
Yep,
so
all with Tom.
So you're strictly day two and three. Wednesday
we're a little late.
Friday.
We're a little late.
That's all right.
Which for people who don't know, we have nothing to do with that. That's all alphabetical. Do you talk about that on the show?
Sure.
People don't know.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Authentic Colt, a Spikester Colt, a Improbable Filly, and a Vekoma Colt. All breezed in that 21. You'll like the breezes, 21 and 1, 21 and 2. These are all pin hooked. And then we have, the last one is a Julie Davies. I don't know if that horse is in 575. We'll see. But, you know, it's fun. And our people like it. It's an investment, Steve. The racing is... The fun, the entertainment, the experience, the pin hooking is more of an investment. That's how I tell people the difference.
Well, and what's interesting is, and I'm curious from your perspective.
Sure.
Do you have, and I'm sure you have some that are involved in both the racing projects and the breeding projects.
Yes, the breeding ones, the pin hooks pay for the racing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
They make a little money and they put it back into the racing. That's usually what they do. And some people, though, just like this pin hooking. They just like this. They feel that it's a good investment and they enjoy it.
You haven't had issues with with people getting, well, getting not bored, but getting anxiety and the how long it takes. I mean,
which part?
Well, from the breeding perspective.
We don't breed. We only bred that one horse, which is Ruby Nell. That's the only horse we bred. I think we bred two, and that she was one of them. So that was it.
That
and that just
funny.
Happened. That just happened. We were in a partnership. We were in a broodmare partnership that we put together. So that was a few years ago.
Because I remember talking about
that was really cool, and we haven't done it since. But we have different people, Steve. Just like anything, we want to give people the opportunity to do whatever they want to do. We always consider ourselves the middlemen. So you want to race? Great. We have these LRF partnerships.
Right.
You want to pinhook? We have Solana Beach Sales that's going to pinhook with Tom and Julie and all these good people. We have we did a stallion share partnership. We own a share of Twirling Candy.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. So we try to give people and get people
experience.
Into this, into all aspects of horse racing too, so that they learn. So that because, then when we buy a 2-year-old and let's say we buy today, I'll use Twirling Candy as an example, that, they know who that is, right? It's not just us writing a little blurb about Twirling Candy. They know more about the stallion, or they've pinhooked a horse, or we did well with that horse, or Spitester, whatever it is. It's good to be as informed and as much knowledge as you can get. It's because this game is not easy, Steve.
No.
There's a really tough barrier of entry. And it's even when it comes to handicapping, which I know you talk about all the time, and I try to get people involved. And, can you imagine showing someone just new like a thoroughgraph sheet, or even the PPs?
Well,
it's like, what is this? This is just numbers. It's very difficult. So, I know you, thanks to people like you, and I know people on the In the Money Media who I work with, and they do a lot of shows like that to kind of get these people involved. And I know we're trying to get more youth involved, and it's not easy. I bring my son to the track. He's 23, and he's been going to the track since he's a little kid, and he really likes it now. He enjoys it. I don't know how much he really looks at the figures and stuff like that, but he enjoys going there and betting a couple bucks. So those are the kind of people we need.
What?
I don't know how to do that, Steve. I wish I had the answer.
No, it's a war. It's hand-to-hand combat,
yep.
And it's all incumbent upon all of us to introduce the game to people. I do have to ask you an interesting or difficult question.
Sure.
And you guys, whether it was foresight, you made a a decision to expand nationally,
mm-hmm.
to go find beachheads in other markets.
Yeah,
and
it's not easy.
Well, it feels to me like you did not want to get potentially caught flat-footed. Given the situation,
I bought a house in Lexington.
Look at you.
During COVID.
Very smart. Sure, that was.
And it's so different there than it is in California.
That's for sure.
I mean, it's like, you go places and people are just really into the racing, they're really into the breeding, they're really into the horse. It's very different than in California where no one really knows what's even like where Santa Anita is. And I felt like at that time I needed to at least be there and get a little footprint in there.
Mm-hmm.
We had an East Coast partnership. We're trying to do more. It's very difficult because unless you're there, Steve, like with anything else, unless you're really there, it's hard to get a hold of it. But I've made a lot of great friends. I've started to, I want to do more there with Little Red Feather, but it's tough when a lot of our people are still in California. Now you look at California, there's some struggles out there.
Yeah.
We can't beat around the bush. I mean, the purses are not competitive with other jurisdictions, which have help. I'm a homer. I'm always going to be in California. My family's there. I will always spend the summers in Del Mar as long as they're racing there, and those little fall meet, which I love. And I keep saying this. I wish I had the answers. I don't like when people come on these shows and say, oh, this is a problem and this is a problem, and they don't come up with solutions. But there's a large issue out there. I mean, you can start with field size. You can start with the purses. You can start with the fact that we can't get help, whether it's from the Indian sports gambling, whatever it is. Sports are tough.
No doubt. What's the mood and
it depends on who you talk to, and you can spin it any way you want to spin it, like with anything, but right now this is always a little quiet time in California, especially, but it should pick up as we get closer to Derby and the weather. We've had terrible, terrible storms, and they've really affected us, but Santa Anita just invested a lot of money in a synthetic track.
Yep.
They're not breezing on it yet, but I think they will soon. And I love your pictures. And I think that once that synthetic track goes in and we can have more consistency and we don't lose the days that we lose, because people don't understand with horses, and again, every trainer is different, but our particular trainer, like, you know, you have a horse coming back from an injury or something and coming off a long layoff, and all of a sudden you can't go to the track for 2 days. Well, you've kind of lost. You have to kind of go backwards again. And it's taking a lot of time for a lot of our horses to come back. It's taken a lot. We've missed a lot of races with this rain. People don't know what's happened, but when the track's closed for a week and you can only walk, like, that pushes you back 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So it's been a struggle right now. And the whole, look, the industry is struggling out there. I think there's people out there that are really care about it. I know the TOC cares. I know First Racing and Aiden and Nate and those guys care. I know Josh Rubenstein down at Del Mar and David, my good friend David Jerkins, and those guys. Everybody cares. And I don't think we really know the answers, Steve. I think we know the issues. I'm not 100% sure we know the answers.
That's a good framing. I can tell you that one thing that I did notice at the end of the week that I didn't get a chance to mention, it looks like there's a path in Northern Cal with Pleasanton.
I've read a little bit about that. Yeah, I've read a little bit about that. Steve, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't really know about it. You should have Gary Fenton on. He'll tell you all about it.
I will. And the, you know, the CARF, the CARF team as well. I mean,
They're working.
Well, it just because a lot of the outfits that are at Golden Gate aren't coming to Southern California.
Yeah. I think that's quite obvious.
So, I mean, having Pleasanton as a to take the lion's share of those dates will go a long way.
Yep.
Right.
I think. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't know the politics involved in that, so I'm gonna plead the fifth on that one. I really don't want to get involved in that. It's something. If I don't know really the specifics of it, it's hard for me to comment on it, and I don't want to do that.
Tell me about who's out there that horse-wise that people should be excited about.
You know what? We have a lot of our graded stakes winners are coming back. Gold Phoenix, who I know is one of your favorites,
like
is coming
Phoenix.
Back.
Yep.
Yeah, he's going to run in the American on March 30th and hopefully go from there to the Woodford on Derby Day. So that'd be exciting. Beer K Man's coming back, another Breeders' Cup horse. Yeah, he's coming back. I think he's six.
I think six is right.
He's going to run in the Shakertown, hopefully at Keeneland.
Oh, wow.
And then go to Derby Day, same kind of thing. So Elm Drive is coming back.
Nice.
She's going to run, I think she might run at Keeneland too, in the Giants Causeway, and then go to the Oaks Day Stakes. So Big Horse is coming back. Conclude is coming back. He's on the comeback trail. Yeah, we just gave everybody that kind of like winter break. Horses need breaks, Steve.
I don't disagree.
And we have a plan with them. We want to get back to the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar this year with all of them. So that's kind of the goal right now. So Big Horse is on the comeback.
Excellent. How about Balnikov?
Balnikov. He's one of your favorites. He's going to try to repeat in the San Francisco Mile.
Oh, good.
It's on April 27th.
Speaking of,
so he'll go up there and repeat. He likes that track. For whatever reason, that horse just doesn't like Santa Anita. I can't figure it
out.
But he's such a cool horse. Such a cool horse.
That might be the last graded stake.
Grade 3, 175.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, we had a lot of fun.
Well,
it's always good to see you, Steve.
Always.
I'm glad I stopped by.
It's always a pleasure.
You're a good man.
They are too kind.
Keep it up. Keep up the good work. We need more of this. We need more positivity. Stay positive. That's my goal. Stay positive.
I'll send you a little sort of a button that I use on
there
online.
You go.
All right?
All right, man.
Good
Have
luck
a great
with these
sale.
Four
hey,
horses.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
How
Thanks,
are
Steve.
You?
Thanks, everybody.
Billy Koch, everybody. We're about 90 minutes in. We've got 90 to come. I'm in contact with Nick Luck, so we'll get him. Casey, let's take the break here, and because otherwise we're not going to get a chance. And then we'll come back, and we've got certainly one of the owners that seemingly is arcing toward not just a Florida Derby, but a Kentucky Derby as a major player, Hades, with a fabulous, there's no other way to describe the work yesterday, and leaving Team DJ Stable, with a lot of smiles. Casey, let's take the break. We're going to come right back. We're at OBS. And second half of the show, we'll check in with John White and get, I haven't even mentioned, the Beholder Mile, the San Simeon, and the Santa Isabel as of yet. That sweet Azteca with a tremendous wire job for Michael W. McCarthy in the Beholder Mile. And it's got to be the first grade one win for Sharp Azteca. And Flavia Pratt aboard. Mucho Del Oro in that San Simeon. Doug O'Neill with Juan Hernandez. Hernandez also circled the oval on Kinza. I tried to get clever. Obviously we used Kinza and all, but thought maybe there was a chance that that the Blatt could intercede. Nice card. And some other things to talk about in there. So we'll touch base with John later in hour three. Nick Luck, going to get some details from Nick in a minute about when he's going to be able to join us to do Cheltenham. But when we come back, John Green. Where's that? Ugh. No good. All right. Because he hates. He can't be happy. He's got to be miserable.
Out of the office for 2 days because he was sick.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't be out of the office for 5 days. I gotta be by example. So I said, okay, well, after 55 years, you're finally trusting me.
The baby bird.
Exactly.
Is finally out of the nest.
Finally. Exactly. So.
John Green, when we come back, and I'm gonna guess that the patriarch is listening in, because he says he has to listen. He has to get his hours, his education hours in, his continuing education. Second half, At the Races, live from OBS. When we come back, stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear. Carabelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
If you're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH.